Welcome to M&A Access, the official podcast of the Alliance of M&A Advisors. My name is Gina Galusha, and I'm the Executive Director of Membership. Today, we have Matt Bain here with us. He's from Liquid, and we're going to have a conversation with him and with you about AI. What does it mean for M&A? How are you going to implement? What are the ways to be safe about it? What are the things you need to think about to be efficient with it? Matt, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Glad you're here. Tell us a little bit about your journey. You started early, kind of in the M&A space, and you've worked through a couple different avenues and then came to Liquid. So tell us about that.
Yeah, absolutely. Firstly, thank you for having me. So my background, grew up in Ireland, can't tell by the accent, and I moved to London straight after I graduated and joined Macquarie Investment Bank, and then went on to Daiwa Investment Bank doing M&A for both, so kind of big public market transactions. And then I got the opportunity to join one of the largest single family offices in the US, working out of their London office. So we put about $1 billion of growth capital to work through that, and all financial services. But it was throughout that process of working there where I was involved increasingly in mid-market deals. More specifically, I was doing a wealth management roll-up, buy and build. And through that process of looking at mid-market deals, I realized just how inefficient it can be, how expensive the transaction costs can be, how often these deals actually fail, and for seemingly kind of random reasons, efficiency reasons. So me and my business partner, who I've known for a long time, we decided to go and really try to solve that problem with AI, which was pretty nascent at the time, but we felt it was only going to get better. So that's what we did, and we set up Liquid.
We met at Summer Conference 2024,
that's right.
You were kind of ahead of the curve. That's when everybody was just starting about, what do we do with AI and M&A? And you came by and said, well, I can be part of this conversation. So what have you found from the beginning of that conversation and implementation in M&A versus now? What are you seeing?
I think one of the big things that we've seen is back in the summer 24 when we met, it was almost like it almost seemed like it was a fad to a lot of people. It was kind of like this new tool, it'll never do this, it'll never do that. And there was a lot of hypothesis around what it could or couldn't do. I think now, you know, 18 months later, it's become something that people are hyper aware of, and they know exactly what it can do and what to be worried about and where the concerns are and also what it can't do. And I think the rules around AI are starting to become a little bit more apparent for people. I do think adoption is still relatively slow, or if it's adopted within a firm, it's quite minimal. So we think there's going to be a lot of expansion in that. But people are definitely aware of it and know that something they need to embrace.
Do you think the adoption is slow because they want to dip their toe and see what they're doing, or because they're afraid of something, or they just don't know how to get started?
I think it's a combination of all of them. I think on the don't know point, I think once they've experienced a little bit of it, there's a big part of the industry, I think, that looks at it almost as, oh, I've tried ChatGPT, so I'm not using AI. And they're just not aware of what else it can do or the kind of power of it if it's used correctly. Fear is definitely a big part of it. So security, you know, most of our conversations when we're selling or whenever people are engaging with the platform is around that security layer. You know, what data is it actually trained on? If I'm putting confidential customer client documents in there, is that going back to some sort of guy in a room somewhere, kind of coding somewhere that we don't know about? And I think what we're finding is, look, because people are so used to actually putting stuff online, they're used to using data rooms, they're used to using third-party technologies, it's really trying to educate around the fact that this is just another tool, but it's a lot more powerful than what you're used to, but also more than just a consumer tool like ChatGPT.
When we've talked in the past, you've talked about, you know, when people implement, they're like, I use AI, but what they mean is, you know, I plan my trip to Italy on ChatGPT. So when you think of what really is a powerful implementation of the use of AI, what does that look like to you?
I think it's looking at every aspect of your organization, whether that's sourcing transactions, doing due diligence, closing deals, legals, you know, even financial modeling and forecasting and quality of earnings, right? It's actually going, where can we push that? Like, what areas of our business are we finding that we're slowing down on? What are causing deals to fall over or to go slower or just making it so that we can't run a lot of deals concurrently because we're getting lost in the weeds? It's almost segmenting every workflow that you do and actually going, how can this give me a boost? Some things it will just be that, it'll be a boost, but some things it will really change the way that you work in a meaningful way. So for us, you know, with what we do with due diligence, you know, my experience on running a Q&A process or sifting through a data room and trying to do some initial analysis, that was a very laborious process that took you, you know, just a long time of back and forth and a very disparate process of lawyers and brokers and sellers and buyers. And whereas with our system, you just automate all of that workflow. You know, you're able to get rid of any duplication. You're able to find information instantaneously that's sourced. So what we're already seeing, even just on due diligence, our corner of the world, is, you know, that could be improved by 50, 60%. And that could be really radical. We're seeing a lot of people starting to use it for sourcing transactions. That's been really successful for some people if used correctly. You know, expanding your buyer outreach by not just 20%, but 3-4x. And increasingly on the financial side as well. But what I think that means is actually it allows you to focus on the things that AI can't do. And it's the things that people actually want to do, which is doing the deal, right? Guiding their client through a transaction process. Mm-hmm. That AI can't do, but it can free up a lot of time for you to actually focus on that.
So more kind of the highest, best use of an advisor's time
Yes.
is advising.
Yes.
Not sifting through which of these documents is the most recent.
Yes.
Or, you know, kind of what is lacking in the documentation that I need to find out.
Yes.
But how do I talk to my client mm-hmm. about what is a holdup?
Yeah, exactly.
Or what is unexpected?
Yes. Yes, absolutely. I mean, I think bankers for a long time have used complicated process and complicated language to try and sort of amplify the experience. But really, and great brokers and bankers know this, is nobody really cares about how nice the model looks or how many questions you ask. You know, people want to get a deal done. That's what you get paid for as an advisor. That's what the seller ultimately wants, your client. And the buyer wants to have full transparency that they're buying what they think they're buying. And that's going to come from experience. That's going to come from advice. And it's going to come from a really systematized approach to all of the kind of deal processes. Mm-hmm. And AI can enable you to do that.
On the buyer sourcing side, what does that look like with AI?
So I think, you know, with sourcing, there's like two types, right? There's like the little black book that the experienced advisor will have. AI is not going to replace that because you know these people yourself. Mm-hmm. But it's not hyper scalable, right? I mean, people are moving in and out of organizations all the time. People retire. It's also got a geographical limit to it. You're going to know a heck of a lot more people in your local area than you are in New York, although you might know a few, right? That experience and that network is incredibly valuable, which is why, you know, we're an AI business. We always go to your guys' events, right? And that's super important. But there's that other aspect of sourcing, which is actually volume, right? And it's not just throwing out stuff into the abyss and seeing what comes back. But it's going, I've got a $20 million industrial business. I've got my black book. I've got some interest. But I think, you know, if we could get more competitive tension, if we could bring more people to the table, that's only going to benefit the deal. AI is brilliant at that in terms of finding signals of when people may want to buy or sell, in terms of actually finding pockets of the market that you yourself don't just, I mean, there's only so much time in the day or in a career, right, to meet everybody in the industry. That helps you identify those people, and it does it very well.
A lot of times I'll hear from folks, this is a relationship business, mm-hmm. right? And you mentioned their little black book mm-hmm. of people they've known forever, and that's how you get deals done. You build relationships, and maybe 5 years down the line or 7.5 years down the line, this person you met and created a relationship with, they're going to do a deal with you, right? Mm-hmm. How do you marry the AI with the relationship aspect?
So I think it's a relationship business in a in a sense, right? Relationships are how you get the deal done, but ultimately we're in the value business, right? We're trying to create as much value for our clients as possible, because ultimately that's how we're going to get paid, right? If I'm brokering a deal, it's a heck of a lot better if I'm the broker and the deal sells for 20 versus 15. I get a better fee, and the client's not worried about the fee because they've just got an extra $5 million growth. So when you look at it as we're in the value game, and relationships are one of the tools that we use to ultimately, exactly.
Yes.
And it is the lever that really defines if you're good at it or not, right? Fundamentally, right? Relationships are crucial. At the end of the day, when you go out to the market and you know someone and you've done deals with that person before, they're going to trust you more. Deals are all about trust. That's where you get the value from. People will pay up if they trust you, you know? So you have to marry that. We want to build the best relationships possible. We want to expand our network as well as possible. We want to build as much trust as a company, as a buyer, as a broker, or the lawyer, whatever it may be. But we also need volume in order to get the best value, and we need efficiency to get the best value. Because you could be doing the deal for your brother, but if you're spending 2 months on a Q of E, that's a waste of everybody's time, and it doesn't bring that ultimate value to the table.
And it brings questions of trust too.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
Yeah. Through the evolution and iterations that you've seen in Liquid, what have you seen, kind of what you expected it to be in the beginning, and then what it is now and what you learned along the way?
Yeah, so I think what we expected was that AI would get better. What that meant, we had no idea. You know, we thought it might mean that it was faster or it was a little bit more accurate. I think what's happened very quickly is just that... Just the use cases that have come out of it have sort of surprised us. Like, an example, I was speaking to a friend of mine who works at the company I used to work for, and he went off and he built this very complicated leverage buyout model and a DCF, and he did this whole valuation. And just to almost humor himself, he stuck the same stuff that he looked at through AI.
Mm-hmm.
And it was 95% accurate. I wouldn't have saw that even 6 months ago. Right, there's been huge developments in terms of like that modeling. That has surprised us. Now, what that means as a broker or banker is you can do things a lot quicker, but your commercial acumen is even more important because you're going to be able to manage a lot more of these deals. You know, once you've done a 3 month training program, you can build a model, but it's understanding the commercial value of that model and what that what the implications of that are. I think on the probably the slower side of things is that adoption piece, right? We thought that maybe once one person started to do it and then two people started to do it, it was something that everybody was doing it very quickly. But I think it goes back to your point earlier around security and around kind of the education side of it. That true adoption, that real, like, we are able to cut into our inefficiencies in a really powerful way, that has been a little bit slower than we expected.
Okay, so adoption is slower. You kind of thought it would take off. So many people were so excited. They were so excited. They were like, this is our new thing, our new savior. Or there were those people who were like, it is evil and it's going to make our brains lazy, which maybe I was one of those. Not the evil part, but the brains lazy part. That was definitely me. But our conversation, what this looks like and how you know it's safe and what you do to make sure it's safe, but also to educate yourself. So you... walk us through that.
Yeah, so from a safety perspective, if you're using standard, cheap, right, consumer type products like ChatGPT, like if you're doing your M&A transaction on the same platform as you are figuring out how to make some new Italian dish, probably some, you know, pause there in terms of security, right? If you're sticking it through whatever you see that's AI, there is security concerns. Like, that will be trained. That will be used by ChatGPT, OpenAI. It will be used to generate new models. It's not confidential. But with enterprise-grade tools, it doesn't work like that. You know, with Liquid, for example, you know, we use the enterprise models, which means that everything is effectively siloed within... With us, it's actually not even siloed to the firm. It's siloed to the deal. So there's no kind of cross-pollination of information, even within your firm. Never mind actually going back in that way to OpenAI. Now, of course, you know, you can't get around the fact that everything is on a server, right? But at that, if you start to worry about that, you shouldn't be using email. right? You shouldn't be using text to talk about deals. There is that, you know, caution is always advised with whatever you do. But looking at those contracts with your software providers and saying, like, is this just getting stuck back into some learning algorithm? Or is this actually something that is, yes, it's software fundamentally, but it is within my firm, my deal, the client's information is protected. They have all of the accreditations, whether it's SOC 2 or in Europe, we have ISO or whatever that may be. Just the same stuff you would look for if you were buying standard tech, you should be looking for with AI, but being even more critical.
Mm-hmm. It reminds me of years ago when you would get someone calling you and being like, I can't give a payment online.
Right, yes, exactly.
That's not
yes.
safe.
Yes.
Right? And knowing what is safe and what isn't safe and what's a phishing and what's not has changed a lot over time.
Yes.
So do you think that there's ways in which AI, what we need to be cautious of now, is going to be different because it is generative, because it is changing constantly and learning constantly? Is that going to change too?
I think it will change, but I think the fundamental principle of actually reading those contracts with your software provider, not just taking the coolest tool, but picking like the enterprise grade tools, mm-hmm. right? And actually understanding like, what are they doing with this data? How are they using it? Now, as AI evolves and improves and all that kind of stuff, yes, the logic behind it will change, but ultimately it will still be the same agreement that you've made, right? It'll still be stored in the same place.
Right.
And those things need to be fixed, you know? Very, very important to be aware of that. And I actually think one of the ways to avoid it is actually not to use 20 different tools. And it's one of the things we want to do with Liquid is actually, you know, trying to make it so that we are the tool that for AI within your live transactions. Mm-hmm. Maybe you use that, and maybe you use something that generates some marketing material for you, but that's kind of it, you know, or you know, but if you have 20 tools, you don't know, you know, you've got 20 people working for you and they're all using different stuff and some of them care about the security, some of them don't, and it's kind of all over the place. Your ability to track and monitor that is effectively nil. So consolidating your tools to enterprise grade, understanding where that data is stored and how it's used, you are de-risking it back down to online payments and using email again, you know?
Right. So it's right. Okay. What about education? A lot of people think AI is going to replace my job,
mm-hmm.
right? Or they think the world is going to leave me behind mm-hmm. if I don't say. I cannot tell you how many times I've seen them post on LinkedIn, like, if you don't learn AI right now, you're going to lose your job or be obsolete in 6 months,
yes.
right? So what does the beginning, how would you recommend someone who's first kind of trying to get into the mode of implementing AI, where would you tell them to start to mm-hmm. be the most effective and how to learn it?
So I think to be most effective, particularly as a starting point, it's trying to use the AI versions of what you're already using, right? So you see people using like kind of email assistance, right? Everybody uses email and this makes it a little bit easier to use email, but right. still email, you know?
Honestly, when you were talking about due diligence and finding the right document, I was thinking, oh my gosh, I really need that for my email. Yeah,
exactly, right?
It's so hard to do an Outlook search and be like, where is it? I know it exists. I saw it once. Yeah. So,
exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. Right. So, you know, with us, you know, we have data rooms, you know, everybody uses some sort of a data room. Some people use more sort of blue chip premium one, some people use kind of Box or, you know, cheaper one, but everybody uses some sort of data. So using something like that but has an AI angle is a great place to start, because you're used to uploading documents. With us, you're going to upload documents, you're going to put them in folders, you're going to, and then try to kind of see, okay, while still not going into using a thousand different tools, but trying to go, okay, well, what about a different approach entirely to sourcing, for example? Why don't we actually try something right away? But starting off with things that look and feel like what you're used to, but that are 10x more efficient mm-hmm. because it's got an AI element to it. And to a certain extent, that's actually unavoidable, because you look at actually some of the bigger companies people are using anyway, like a Box or a Salesforce. If you're afraid of AI, Salesforce aren't that worried. You know, they're still going to put AI into their system and you're still going to have that contract and you're still going to use it.
Fair enough.
So it's actually incredibly important to know what these contracts are, be be very comfortable that the AI is coming. It's here. It's going to be embedded in tools that you're very comfortable with. And it's by picking the best ones. I'm not sort of overshooting either. I think on the, will it replace all of jobs? I think it makes, you know, there is a reality here, which I think it would be naive to say it's not going to make some big changes, right? It's going to affect the job market. How that works, whether people will have to be more adaptable, I think that's for sure. People will have to be a wee bit more mobile and a little bit more, their skills are going to have to be more transferable. Whether that's going to mean 20% unemployment, 2% unemployment increase, or we don't know. Our experience of it is it makes you more what you already are, right? Mm. So if you are not particularly good at what you do, AI is going to catch up to you pretty quickly, probably already there. But if you're a great broker, right? And I mean, with your members, people who are out there and they're building relationships and they're doing things and they're closing transactions, they're good at what they do. And it comes back to the relationship point. Mm-hmm. AI can't touch that. This will make you spend more time on your relationships, build a better platform, a better franchise. If you're sitting at home all day, priding yourself on putting a nice presentation, investment memorandum together, it will hurt you, I think.
I love what you said there. It's a magnifier.
Yes.
Right? It magnifies your flaws and
yes.
It magnifies your expertise.
Yes.
And your capabilities. Because if you ask it a question, if you don't have the expertise to say the context wasn't right there, mm-hmm. or we're not thinking about this from the right angle, you're going to get a bad answer.
Exactly.
Right? And then you're going to go advise on a bad answer.
Exactly. Hmm. Yes.
Interesting. Okay. What are you using now? What's your favorite tool?
So,
other than your own, obviously.
Well, of course. so I have, the one that we've really seen emerge, particularly on the Excel financial modeling stuff, is Claude, okay. which we started to use. I think it's really impressive. It's probably the biggest step change in terms of like financial modeling is like there's a bit of an art to it, and everybody does it slightly differently. This is pretty good. You know, this will get you there. Now, you literally need exactly the same level of commercial acumen, exactly the same level of understanding of the deal, understanding of the client's needs. That hasn't diluted at all. Mm-hmm. But throwing a DCF together, which you could learn how to do in a couple of days, you know, from reading online, that the time to do that now, I think, is just radically different. It can be done so much more efficiently. So I think that's a super useful, tool. And the other thing I actually use, which I kind of recommend to anybody looking for, is we use a company called Adio for a CRM. Mm-hmm. And it's got like an AI enabled CRM thing, I think partly owned by Google now. But that is to me, the best CRM I've ever used. But to be honest with you, I use ChatGPT for my own stuff.
Right.
But those are the tools we use in the business outside of Liquid that we really like.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, disclaimer, this could change in 6 months.
Of course,
because it's moving so fast.
Absolutely.
Interesting. Okay. Where are you seeing the highest ROI from implementing AI into your business or from your clients?
So there's a few things that we've noticed a big difference. So I mentioned Q&A earlier,
yes.
right?
Yes.
So, and that kind of extends to broader diligence. Nobody really, well, maybe due diligence providers like doing due diligence, but bankers generally don't like doing due diligence. And it's not, oftentimes it's not particularly deeply complex, deeply interesting work, right, for a lot of people. Again, some people might disagree with that, but I never find it.
We'll get it in the comments. It'll be fine.
And but now that ability to, you know, you come into our platform and you say, what's the seasonality of, you know, this business, right, in terms of their you know, I don't know if you're selling a Christmas tree business, right? And all your revenues in December. The ability to not have to go through every management account over the last 5 years, to go through different customer contracts, to see the sales figures, to reconcile all that, and to just go, what's the seasonality? Even if it's not mentioned in the data room, it will come out and it will say 70% of your sales are in December because you're a Christmas tree business, but also because the management account said and because whatever else, right? there's the sources, there's exactly where we found it, not the page or the document, but there it is, right there in the data room. It's actually really hard to almost put a metric around the, you know, it's 10 times better, but it's effectively eliminating a workflow there, right? It's effectively gone.
And a calculation.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. Now, in terms of like definitive metrics, like duplication is, I think, one of the easiest things that AI, like one of the obvious use cases for AI. If you're running a sell-side process and you have 10 buyers who look at the company, sure, they're all unique and have their own interests or whatever.
They're all their own pretty snowflake.
Exactly, they are, exactly, yes. Exactly. But they all want to know basically the same stuff, right? Like, what's the growth? What's the churn? What's the margin? You know, it's all the same stuff. Our software, right? And I'm using our software because that's what we kind of live and breathe. But it just removes all duplicate questions and workflows like that. We just detect it. Show it to you and it's gone. So many nights, particularly when I was sell side banking, where I would spend, you know, like the 2, 3, 4 in the morning sifting through data rooms and answering the same question over and over again. And in essence, those workflows are just gone. In terms of ROI, in terms of like revenue, so that sourcing piece, we're seeing people who are talking about bringing their buyer pool up 10, 15x. Now, I think that's, don't be controversial, I would say it's probably exaggerated.
Right.
But let's say they're exaggerating at 80%. Bringing 3 times more buyers to the table is a very powerful ROI. That's not just an ROI in terms of you can find buyers quicker, right? Because you don't have to go through and build lots of, you know, data books or whatever on the buyers. But again, we're in the value business. If you have more buyers, on average, the price is going to go up. Your fee is going to go up and your client is going to be happier. That is almost like a quantifiable value increase. You know, it's probably not linear, but it's close. Mm-hmm. More buyers, you know, more price. So those are things that we've really been surprised at how effective they can be. And that's not even getting into financial modeling and things like that. But that I think you're going to see bigger ROI on over the next 6 months as well.
Okay, so for you and for Liquid, what are you seeing are the next steps?
Yeah, trying to consolidate as many of these tools that we're talking about into one place. For the security reason that we talked about, right? You know, less tools is generally more secure and you know where everything is. But ultimately, AI is a data tool, right? That is what it's for. It is a way to understand and ideally commercialize your data properly. And the more things that sit within an ecosystem, a single ecosystem, particularly with our tool, it is siloed, right? It's not just training on anything. It is for your deal. It is for your company. The better the product, the value of the sort of the full scope of M&A AI tools in one platform is worth much more in terms of value and security than it is each of those individual tools and the sum of those parts. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the way that I'm seeing it in my head is like when you have the due diligence portion, talking to the Q of E portion, talking right. to the, you know, legal,
yes.
all of that. It's almost like your advisors are having a conversation. They're all in the same
exactly.
place, right? And you can be seeing that and thinking through it holistically
yes.
rather than fragmented.
Absolutely.
Totally makes sense.
Absolutely. It's just a lot less friction as well, right? Mm-hmm. It's like you do your due diligence right. or you build your marketing materials or whatever it is. And then you're bringing people into the platform for the data room. That's getting underwritten. And then you're showing it to a lender, and that's getting underwritten. Right, so it's one big process.
Wow.
We think that's very powerful, so we want to add to that.
Right, totally. The other thing, a question I want to ask, and then I'll let you run away. My background is somewhat in marketing, and we used to work with big, big list organizations where they would be like, hey, we know the data from how they deal with this
yes.
organization and how they deal with this. And they used to sell it as, we have more data for you about how this list performs, right? Mm-hmm. So when you were thinking about siloed or not siloed, what made you lead to the conclusion that siloed is better for that individual company? Is it because it makes them feel more secure? Or because maybe they're kind of what's the word I'm looking for? Ecosystem is unique. And so that information being shared across supporting other companies is no bueno.
I think particularly when we started out, security was the big question. And we almost wanted to over-index towards security.
Right.
And some of security, it's less about actually the security and how it's perceived. Right. So I could probably build even better technology with exactly the same level of security, but it may be viewed as slightly more broad or slightly more general, and therefore people will be concerned about it. So part of this is just a educating your customer piece, right, and bringing them along on the journey. But while still keeping that level of security at the level and just constantly making sure that it's getting better, right? So I think there's that, but then one of the things that we've looked at is actually expanding that silo of a per deal to a per firm, right?
Right.
So and that, because we've done the analysis, we've looked at our modeling, we've looked at everything, and ultimately, in the same way as email is not, you know, per sort of workflow or per team, it's for the organization. There's increased value, and actually the security is the same, but there's more transparency. And security is kind of like a double-edged sword. Part of it is, yes, what tools you use. But a lot of security areas are errors, human error, right? It's the person who goes and answers that weird email about, you know, giving someone access to something or sending money or whatever. The more transparency you have, again, with limited tools, right? So you have less tools, transparency across your firm, and then, yes, within the technology, it's siloed on a per-deal basis, so there's no cross-pollination of info. In that way, arguably, that's actually more secure, right? You can build in better guardrails around how management actually see all of this in one place, train it on all of the data that's in that firm.
That's powerful.
And it becomes a much more powerful, much more secure, much more transparent tool,
right.
Which we think is valuable.
Yeah, I could see a whole different level of questions and answers,
yes.
And maybe even KPIs,
it, well, 100%, right? Yes.
Between the deals and what's being successful and what's not and why and how can we look at it differently and how can we work differently.
Yes.
I love absolutely. That idea. Really, our people are ravenous for AI conversations. At our winter conference just now, the room was busting at the seams,
yes,
to talk about these things. So we really appreciate you coming and sharing your insights and what you know. And maybe we'll have another chat some other day.
I hope so.
But hopefully not to replace this one.
No, thank you so much. Really appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you. And thank you for joining us. Hope you learned lots and are ready to go dive into your AI journey. See you later.